Bin Laden was fixated on the idea that the United States was weak. In the years leading up to 9/11, he often spoke of its weakness to his followers, citing such examples as the U.S. withdrawal from Vietnam in the 1970s and from Somalia 2 decades later, following the Black Hawk Down incident in which 18 U.S. servicemen were killed. Bin Laden enjoyed recounting how al-Qaeda had slipped fighters into Somalia in 1993 to help train the Somali clans battling American forces, who were there as part of a UN mission to feed starving Somalis. "Our boys were shocked by the low morale of the American soldier, and they realized that the American soldier was just a paper tiger," Bin Laden exulted. His disciples eagerly agreed with the man they loved like a father. Bin Laden assured his men that the Americans love life like we love death and would be too scared to put boots on the ground in Afghanistan. Look at what a drubbing Bin Laden and his men had inflicted on the Soviets in Afghanistan. "And America was every bit as feeble as the former Soviet Union," Bin Laden told his nodding acolytes. Those in his inner circle who had any niggling doubt about this analysis largely kept it to themselves. As plans for the 9/11 attacks took a more definite shape, some of al-Qaeda's senior officials expressed concern that the coming attacks might anger the Taliban leader, Mullah Omar, to whom Bin Laden had, at least notionally, sworn an oath of allegiance. During the 5 years that Bin Laden had been the Taliban's honored guest, Mullah Omar and other Taliban leaders had made it clear that al-Qaeda could not use Afghanistan to conduct a freelance war against America. Bin Laden thought he could help inoculate himself against any anger caused by the attacks on the United States by offering the Taliban a highly desirable head on a platter. That of Ahmad Shah Massoud, the storied leader of what remained of the anti-Taliban resistance in Afghanistan. For the Massoud hit, Bin Laden recruited 2 Tunisian-Belgian al-Qaeda assassins who disguised themselves as television journalists keen to interview the legendary guerrilla leader. During the summer of 2001, while al-Qaeda groomed the Massoud assassins, the leaders of the group were putting the finishing touches on their plans for the spectacular attacks on America's East Coast. Ramzi Bin al-Shib, a key plotter based in Hamburg, sent a message to Bin Laden on Thursday, September 6th, saying that the attacks on Washington and New York would take place the following Tuesday. And on September 9th, Bin Laden heard the welcome news that his assassins had mortally wounded Massoud, for whom he had long harbored contempt. Now, the stage was set for what Bin Laden believed would be his greatest triumph, a spectacular strike on the country that was Islam's greatest enemy because it propped up the godless dictatorships and monarchies of the Middle East and, of course, Israel. With one tremendous blow against America, Bin Laden would get the United States to pull out of the Middle East, and then Israel would fall, as would the Arab autocracies, to be replaced by Taliban-style regimes. This was Bin Laden's fervent hope and belief. From the day that President George W. Bush took office, January 20, 2001, every morning, 6 days a week, CIA official Michael Morell briefed the president about what the intelligence community believed to be the most pressing national security issues. Reed thin and in his early 40s, Morell spoke in terse, cogent paragraphs. On August 6th, 8 months after Bush was inaugurated, Morell met with the president at his vacation home in Texas to tell him of the CIA's assessment that Bin Laden was determined to strike inside the United States. This briefing was heavily colored by the fact that Ahmed Ressam, an Algerian on the fringes of al-Qaeda, had recently pled guilty to charges that he planned to detonate a bomb at Los Angeles International Airport in mid-December 1999. The August 6th briefing noted that the FBI had come across information indicating preparations for hijackings or other types of attacks. After the briefing, Bush continued to enjoy the longest presidential vacation in 3 decades. On the morning of September 11, 2001, in Sarasota, Florida, Morell gave the president's daily brief as usual. There was nothing memorable in it. Together with political adviser Karl Rove and press secretary Ari Fleischer, Morell got into the president's motorcade to head to the local elementary school where Bush planned to meet with some students. During the ride over, Fleischer asked Morrell if he had heard anything about a plane hitting the World Trade Center. Morrell said he hadn't, but would check it out with the CIA Ops Center. Officials at the Ops Center confirmed the news and quickly demolished a widely held perception. It wasn't a small plane that had wandered off course. It was a large commercial jet. At the elementary school, where Bush was reading a story about a pet goat to a group of second graders, the news came on TV that a second jet had hit the Trade Center. Bush was hustled out of the school to head to Air Force One, which took off for Barksdale Air Force Base near Shreveport, Louisiana. Fleischer was keeping careful notes that day, and the first time he recorded bin Laden's name was at 10:41 a.m., when Chief of Staff Andy Card said to Bush on Air Force One, "It smells like Osama bin Laden to me."